Welcome to the roadmap. This was our first episode with three people. So we had some difficulties coordinating things. We made a couple of mistakes, but we're still learning. We're young, and we hope we're going to get better over time. Enjoy the episode. Munavar, Marco, hello.
Hello.
Hi there. Thank you.
How's it going, Munavar?
Things are good. I'm here in New York. It is March. It is still cold and wintry. Happy to be here.
So Marco and you are today, this is the first episode that we're having, you know, two guests, but Marco is also going to have the role of a co-host. So before we start, you know, we know a lot about you, Marco. This is your, I think, fourth episode. So I think our viewers are quite familiar, you know, with your experience. Munavar, you are, let's say, very, very a seasoned player in the industry. So before we start, can you just briefly tell us about your experience and, you know, about your career?
Yes, I'm happy to share. So right now, I am a senior partner at management consulting firm called Oliver Wyman. And I work across industries. So I've worked in banking, insurance, healthcare, publishing, telco. Right now, I'm working on railroad. So it's been a wide range of projects. I am a systems designer and have a background in software engineering. So my projects will always entail, I think the common theme is taking us from a place of chaos to a place of order.
Okay, so you said a place of chaos. Through your career, you probably, you know, experienced many problems. And as you mentioned, the place of chaos. One of the reasons that can cause that chaos is context switching. You know, so what is actually context switching and, you know, why does it happen?
So context switching is, it's when you're asking your brain, without even knowing it really, you're asking your brain to switch from one area of focus to another. And it can be something as small as sometimes people will be preparing food in the kitchen and they'll have the television on or the radio on, and they are also helping their child with homework. It can happen in a work setting where you're deeply focused on let's say, writing code, but then you have a message come through on Slack that you switch over to, or you go and take a look at email because you saw something come through there, or you're thinking about a meeting that you have to attend in 6 minutes. So all of these things will have an effect on the brain. And I think in more recent years, especially in let's say 2009, for example, there were some big studies that were conducted on how this creates a drag on your brain. And for any of the things that you are now asking your mind to do, you don't do any of those things very well. The other big thing that happens is it does create an overall lasting effect, adverse effect on the mind, because you are continuously tiring it out.
What about you, Marco?
I faced context switching in various occasions during my professional career as engineer. So from the working on multiple projects at the same time, it's really hard to warm up when jumping from one project to another. It's really hard to basically create added value. And basically you are hired to do so. So it's really hard to understand and give that added value in certain domain expertise when you are jumping between different domains. So all these things basically make you not so efficient. And as Munivar said, it tricks your brain, and you are not you cannot go into deep focus and be creative and produce the quality work.
Is context switching something, you know, when do you realize that context switching is happening, Munivar? I mean, it might creep up on you, you know, without you realizing.
I think you have to be conscious of when do you do your best work, and when do you, after you sit down and accomplish something, do you feel leaving really good? And I think for myself, in my mid-30s, I'm 48 now, so in my mid-30s, I realized that it was only after going deep into something that I was working on that I just came out of it feeling satisfied, because I didn't allow myself to get distracted or tricked into responding to things. And I think just, you know, as someone who is trying to observe, like, I want to get that feeling back. I want to get that deep satisfaction of having accomplished something. I want to feel that more and more. So just having observed it and then picking up on, wow, this is why it's happening, because I did not allow myself to switch over to something else. So I started researching it when I was in my mid-30s, and I didn't really understand it until probably a few years after that, and spoke to folks who do research in this field. But most people do not know that it's happening. Most people actually think that they're being really smart, clever, intelligent, so that it's a sign of, oh, wow, I can do all of these things all at once. And it's not that your brain can do all those things at once. It is fast switching between one thing and the other, right? So even that silly example of preparing a meal and having the television on, your mind is fast switching between the two things, and it just wears it down. So it's better to choose to do one thing or the other, but not to spread it thinly across more than one thing.
What would be, Marco, the, let's say, you know, consequence of or long-term effects of context switching?
So I can talk more about consequences on the projects, mm-hmm. and maybe Munivar can say more about long-term consequences on brain. regarding the project and your everyday work, if you're a developer and you're jumping from one project to another, it's really hard to produce good code. It's really hard to think about the architecture behind. It's really hard to propose creative solutions, and maybe solutions that are simpler. And you know how they say you have to put more time and energy to create something simpler than complex. So all these things make you and the project less efficient, and at the end client is not so happy, and when you're jumping from task to task, and basically you are becoming just task doer, so you are just checking the box, and that's not good, and that's and it's really hard to grow by behaving that.
I mean, you mentioned you become just a task doer, and you actually, you know, become in a way you can become desensitized from the project. You know, it's just your job, and you start, you know, getting not, you know, you're not involved into that, and that might affect the whole project. You know, the quality, and in the end, the project might fail. Have you ever experienced something like that?
Every time. I think on every project. And I think this happens because a person's nature is to try to do a good job, to please, and you think you are pleasing by saying yes to everyone, right? Yes to everyone and to everything. And you feel like, oh, wow, well, I should get that done right away. I just got asked to do it. And it takes a lot of confidence, I think, to say, no, it's not the right thing to do. Like, you have to have the confidence, but also have experienced it before of like, this is just not going to lead to a good result. So I think part of that, I've seen this happen on just about every project, and part of the responsibility of people who are leading the project is to know that this happens and to talk about it openly from the very, very beginning. And I'm happy to, at a later point, go into detail on how we set up certain guardrails, just to make sure that unless we addressed it head on at the start of the project, we would have continued down the same path that this particular almost failed project had been on, and how we had to restructure it entirely to make sure that we didn't have this level of context switching.
Yeah. Is it sometimes impossible to avoid context switching, or does it depend, you know, on just preparing yourself at the beginning of the project? But, you know, let's face it. I mean, you, Marco, worked as when you were a young developer, you know, when you just started the company, you were stretched across probably several projects, but you didn't have, you know, let's say, much of a choice. You know, you had to do it. So is it possible, you know, to avoid context switching in a way? I mean, at some point you have to accept it. You know, I think everybody's been through it, you know, and just notice, okay, context switching is happening right now, but we have to just, you know, go through that.
Yes. So I think as long as you do it and you are conscious of doing it, right? And you say, look, this is just going to be a rough day. We're going to be flipping between a bunch of things. It only becomes a problem when it is chronic and it becomes a way of life. It becomes the culture. It becomes a, oh, look how cool I am because I can just switch between all these things. That's when it's a problem. And I think there's a little bit more understanding around it now, but before, people would brag about how much multitasking they were able to do. And that's when it's a problem, right? Because they actually think it's a very good thing when all it's doing is resulting in lower quality of work, and it's bad for the mind.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. What would you say? What do you propose? So when you face that you are basically living context switching life, when you are basically I totally like what you said about pleasing others. I think that is one of the root cause of context switching. You want to please others, and you basically that is like the reason why you are jumping to some other stuff, and at the same time you are working on one stuff. What would you say? What do you propose? How to be better? How to avoid context switching? Are there some kind of methodologies, or maybe some kind of tips and tricks to use to basically to make some kind of rules?
Yes, so I can explain this more by way of a real life example for a project that was high stakes, and it required some deeper structural changes in order for this cultural shift to happen. So this project was I first encountered it in November 2015. I was asked to come in and essentially rescue a project that was hanging by a thread. The team was quite large. There were about 200 people. And this was a mix of strategists, designers, copywriters, illustrators, front-end engineers, back-end engineers, QA. So every discipline was represented. And to come into something, I will always try to understand what is it that is failing here. And very quickly, it became apparent that just the way in which the work was happening, which was, you know, moving between tasks very quickly, not going deep to solve for root cause for what was being designed. And the whole point of doing a major redesign, and this product was going to go out to 1/3 of the American population. So that's 110 million people were going to use this product because they already had the service. So if you're going to solve for something that had been not done very well for many, many years, and you're getting asked to start from a blank canvas, it requires tremendous depth of thinking and to work in a way that you normally haven't before. So early on, what I realized was I don't think anyone had ever had the conversation out loud on here's the method by which I see everyone working, and it's not gonna get us anywhere because you don't have time. You don't have uninterrupted time to simply sit and think and work through the problem, because you have to do a lot of drawings or sketching out, whether it's design or engineering, it's always the same, right? Like you're gonna start from a conceptual place. And you have to have time to just explore and throw away everything that doesn't work, right? But you can only do that once you're thinking about it. You can only do that if you're not interrupted. And so within 2 months of just understanding and doing some master planning on the project. So in January, and I remember this day very, very clearly, it's January 4th, 2016, we kicked off the project in earnest, and I laid out some very clear ground rules of for the 5 working days that we have in the week. 1 day is going to be dedicated to coming together in person to do work. And all of the other meetings that were scattered throughout the week, we're just not going to do that, because every time you have to go into a meeting, it's not just the time spent in the meeting, but there is preparation that happens. There is anxiety that happens, whether you want that feeling or not. There's work that comes out of that meeting. And usually there's multiple meetings that are sprinkled throughout the day. So what that means is you cannot get back into the groove of what you're doing. And this is all work that requires incredible, incredible concentration to come up with something that is net new. So I set into place Thursdays as being the 1 day of the week. Psychologically, it worked out the best. We had a different day of the week before that was terrible, and everyone gave me feedback on it. It was Wednesday that we had chosen, and everyone felt that was just too much of an interruption in the middle of the week, and people were exhausted by Thursday. So within the first 4 weeks, I'd gotten tremendous amount of feedback, not in group settings. People would write to me privately or speak to me privately because they felt a little bit afraid to even express that. I said, great, thank you. If this is what you're going through, then that's obviously not the right day of the week. So let's move it to Thursday. And what this also did was it gave Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday as 3 consecutive days of total momentum. 0 meetings allowed. And the only time that we got together was within these sub-teams. We had to break up the work into different topic areas. So for the 5 sub-teams, we would do 5 sessions in the morning. And each team is just spending 30 minutes with myself and the other person who's leading the project. So that allowed for this very focused, the rest of the day, you spend 30 minutes checking in, going through the work, asking for help. All eyes are on it, and all disciplines are at the table. And then the rest of the day, you are literally not allowed to have a meeting. You can tap someone and ask, you know, question if it's over Slack or in person, but there are no meetings to interrupt your flow. And setting up that structure, because most leaders will not do that. Most leaders will not say, hey, I've been a designer, I've been an engineer, I know what it takes to get the work done. And you should not have to do your work after you go home, after you have dinner, and now you try to stay up late and try to do it, or you're spending your weekend time on it. That's not okay, and that's not humane. So as a leader, to set up very strict guidelines and to explain to people why, right? Here's why we're doing it, and tell us how it feels. Do you actually feel like you're getting more done? And the response was, overwhelmingly, not a single person on that very large team of 200 had ever worked in this way. And no one had ever talked about the brain science of what does it take to engage in something and then disengage, engage again and then disengage, right? The mind is a powerful thing, but it can't handle that. So explaining and being very, very open about it and setting up the structure, setting up the rules. If somebody wanted to have a separate meeting, they had to actually come to me to ask for it. And I would say no. So nobody asked for it. It created these habits that just wouldn't have happened otherwise.
I want to ask you, how did they react when you proposed that new way of work? When you say that zero meetings are allowed during the Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday, what was their reaction? Because there is like a Scrum methodology which is full of meetings. There are daily meetings, a lot of other stuff, and a lot of other stuff happening. What was their reaction when you basically propose slightly different way of work?
Well, it wasn't slightly different. It was dramatically different. They had never worked in this way before. And I said, even with Scrum, right? Like Scrum doesn't say spend your time in meetings. Scrum says you have a meeting so that everybody knows what everyone's working on. And we work through problems together. It's not just about reporting status, because that would be a dumb meeting. So explaining to folks that, look, because most people were afraid of this project was going to get canceled. And if the project gets canceled, then you're also in danger of losing your job. And the other ways of working had already been tried and had already been exhausted. So if it had been pure negativity for 11 months and almost getting, losing a project, right? And possibly losing your job, everyone is very open to, okay, if this is a new way. And I had to come in with the confidence to say, look, I hadn't done it before, but I said, I'm pretty sure this is going to work because it's common sense. If your job requires this much focus and you're telling me that the only day that you can work is Saturday and Sunday because nobody's bothering you, then why would we not create that kind of feeling for you on as many days of the week as possible? So there was incredible openness, and I think for people it was refreshing that's a leader, instead of me saying, you know what, we're all going to do 16 hours a day, I don't care what it takes, right? Like that's usually what someone does when you're on the verge of losing something and not looking at the root cause of why isn't the work very good. And so there's just a lot of structure that you have to put in place, and people want structure. People want structure so that they can be creative and do their best work.
I read your blog about this topic, context switching. And in your blog, there is a nice chapter about giving the gift of time. And basically saving your time. Time is a pressure thing, and you cannot basically recover it when it's lost. You can recover the money, you can recover the progress, but the time when it passes, it passed. And it's really nice. It combines really nicely with this context switching, because when you're jumping from one meeting to another meeting, and when you're jumping from one task to another task, basically you are basically wasting your time, because whatever you work, you are not deeply focused, and you're not efficient enough. So could you maybe tell us more about this moment that you figured out in your life, how that happened?
Yes. So I think early on in my career, the triangle that they always talk about, the triangle that has time on one point, money on another point, and then the third point varies. Sometimes it's effort, energy, sometimes it's quality. But essentially, all three of those points are saying the same thing. So of each of those things, I would realize project after project, everything else was something you could recoup or something you could replenish, but time was the one thing that you would not get back. And project example that I gave you from 2016, it was in a highly, highly competitive market space. So when you don't launch, you are actually getting eaten by your competitors. And we know that for many brands, right, there's the sort of quick and dirty, get something out, and it's a broken experience. It doesn't feel very good. And you can feel it in probably not just that particular product or service, but in many other things that brand has to offer. So it has to be a big change in ethos to respect time in this way and to understand that if you want to have an advantage in the market, then you understand that time is the one thing that that you have to give a tremendous amount of respect to. And that means, that translates to enabling it for your own teams. So I think as I shared also that sentiment with executives who were the ones sponsoring that particular project, and then afterwards, you know, for projects that came after, there was an openness, because I don't think most people talk about that. It's always the money part. Always the money part of, you know, here's what it's going to cost to do this thing. But I think what people aren't realizing is the money part is very fluid, but the time part is unforgiving. So we have to move our focus to that. So I think that's how I was able to get buy-in at the executive level.
Regarding context switching, one question from my side: are you able to live that in your personal life? How do you manage that in your personal life? Do you have any tips, tricks for that? I'm young dad, and it's pretty chaotic in my family, and I would like to hear maybe some tips and tricks from your side.
Yes, I'm happy to share. So I do believe that our work life and our personal life is really one and the same. When you are doing something that you enjoy very, very much, it makes its way. It bleeds over, right? There's no strong line between the two. And I think philosophically as well, the philosophies we bring to work, the same philosophies we bring to our personal life. I have two kids. Even when they were very young, they are now, Owen is 14, Alistair is 12. And from a very young age, we know that, especially for kids, right? Like, they don't see anyone else in the house. They see their parents, or they might see some siblings, but they watch your every move. They listen to your every word, and they pick up on the habits that are right in front of them. So even very simple things For example, when you are having a meal, there are no devices anywhere, right? There's no screen of any kind anywhere. When you're sitting down to a meal, you are having a conversation and you are speaking one at a time. And we established that from a very early age. And it seems like a small thing, but it actually will carry over into other parts, because you're showing respect and you're showing one at a time focused behavior. Or your child is watching you cook, or your child is watching you read. Many people will have something playing in the background and reading at the same time. Your brain cannot do both. It simply cannot do both. And it makes it very, very tired to be taking in at least two different major sets of stimuli, right? In addition to everything else that's environmental. So when our kids saw that, let's say if there's music playing, but then it's time to sit down and read, music goes off. Music is turned off, right? Because music, again, and you're showing respect, you want to be fully focused on the thing that you're doing. And that leads to an incredibly calm home environment too. It's not the, because all those sounds are something that you have to process. Just in terms of, you've probably seen the stat, the average person takes in 6,000 to 10,000 pieces of advertising per day, right? That is separate from just all the other stimuli in our environment. So that's why you have to be focused on creating this sense of calm by showing just single focus activities in your own home. And that helps for kids to see that and experience it. They will feel calm themselves, and they will want to take that with them into elementary school, high school, etc. They will keep that for life.
One question regarding the work. How much time does it take for the environment, for the people around you, to basically to see the positive results of this new way of work after you embedded mm-hmm. it? So
I would say, so I work on very large projects, enterprise level projects, and I'm usually the one who will make the final call on our sprint cycles, the length. And I like for different disciplines, a sprint cycle to be the same length. So design doesn't have a separate one. Engineering doesn't have a separate one. We decide on the one cycle. For enterprise projects, if I'm choosing between 1 week, 2 week, 3 week, 4 week, I have landed on 4 weeks being the sweet spot. And I would say it takes about one sprint cycle for people to see, wow, this just felt a lot better. And then I would say after three sprint cycles, it's absolutely solidified. People can't even remember what it was like or how they were able to even do anything prior to that. So it's transformational, because you get your life back, right? You feel really good about what you accomplished during the day, because there's zero BS. It's no nonsense, and you're able to do your best work. And then you have your personal life back, right? You leave work, and in the evening and weekends, they belong to you. You may choose to do more work at that time because you're feeling so positive, but that's on you. That's, you know, a personal preference. But it's a life-changing approach to both work and personal life.
And I'm just curious, could you tell us more about the choice of 4 weeks sprint? You mentioned that you had experience with 1, 2, 3, 4. What is so cool about the 4 weeks
sprint? Yes. So for enterprise level projects, 4 weeks, because of the complexity of what you're dealing with mostly legacy products and with also legacy ways of working. 1 week is perfectly fine if you have an experienced team that is working on, let's say, in the startup environment. That's okay. That's actually okay. But it has to be a team that's, you know, already used to working together, and it's just very, very focused. It's an extreme way of working. 1 week is not easy. So 4 weeks, I found it just gives a chance for accomplishment. And everybody knows, you know, whatever stories we don't accomplish in that sprint is going to spill over. But if you make the time period just too small, you're going to feel like you didn't accomplish very much. So that sense of accomplishment is part of creating overall momentum for the entire project. And so that's why 4 weeks is what I found to be the most comfortable and the most productive.
Regarding the client, how hard? So you mentioned that we talked about how to get the buy-in from the people on the project about this new way of work. How hard is to get the buy-in from the client, and how hard is to basically keep the client within the rules? You know how it is. You set up like a Thursday for the meetings, and then some executive they want a meeting on Tuesday because Thursday is something else for them. So how hard is to basically keep the client within the rules?
Same as with my children, same as with my clients. So zero exception policy. So the day is the day, and we set all this stuff up, because I explained to them, I said, look, if we don't agree to this model of working, you as a client are going to lose time and money and quality. That's a given. So the more exceptions you as a client want to make, the worse your product or service is going to be. And why would you, as an outside party, as an outside consultant, why would you want to spend all of this, right? Like, you're investing in this. This is a major investment piece. It's a big decision. And if we have, and we explain all of it, right? They have to read the stage talk that I shared with you as well, other research that we've done and put together, just simply explaining that the old ways of working are going to yield the same poor product or poor service that you're trying to get out of. So it's really, there's no advantage in trying to create chaos. The more chaos you create on the project, the worse it'll be. And I say it just like that. There's no sugarcoating. There's no beating around the bush. And clients appreciate it, because most people are not willing to take a strong stance.
Thank you, Munavar. I don't have any questions from my side.
Yeah, so I think we can go to, you know, just wrap everything up. And, you know, just in a few sentences, your closing thoughts about context switching.
I really just hope that more people stand up for themselves and understand they're observant and self-reflective and can see, I just feel so much better and I got so much more done. And I was able to come up with something completely new because I allowed myself the time and space to do it, because I did not get distracted with all these things that are constantly in our face. And all of us are, you know, we're in email, we're in Slack, we have messages on our phone, and it's very easy to fall prey to that. So it is a conscious decision, and my hope and my hope and what I think will hopefully happen is people will just see that they feel better. They feel better about both their work life and their personal life if they set some of these structures in place. And if, you know, once you start practicing it, and if enough people are practicing it, then it just becomes a new way of life. It becomes a new culture.
What about you, Marco? Your closing thoughts?
I turned off all notifications on my cell phone and on the laptop. Because of that. But I totally agree. Having a block of time that gives you to focus, it makes you more creative. It makes you more efficient, and it makes you more happy, basically, because you feel fulfillment after that. When you're jumping from task to task, when you're trying to please people, it is exhausting, and you don't feel, you don't, you feel sad at some point.
Yes.
So I would say it's I can take out from this conversation two things. First one is we have to work on ourselves to not please people, and the second thing is that you have to implement, and as Mundevar said, invisible structures that will basically push you in that direction, push you and your team in that direction.
Okay, so context switching is definitely something that you have to look out for, because it might cost you your whole project. And at the end, I mean, it can affect your personal life, you know, because you're going to be unsatisfied with what has happened, you know, with your project if you don't manage it successfully. Okay, so that's it for today. Thank you both for being here, and I hope I'll see you again, both in this edition.
Thank you, Mundevar. Thank you, Sven. And looking forward to have another topic for discussion.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
Take care.